Welcome to Wine Thieves. I'm your co-host, Sarah D'Amato.
And I'm John Sabo.
This is the podcast where we go behind the label and meet the people and help tell the stories of iconic wine-growing regions and lesser-known terroir.
And drink lots of good wine.
Welcome back to Wine Thieves. This week's episode has taken us to the south of France in the country's most productive IGP, the Pays d'Uc. This long region spanning 240 kilometers across the Mediterranean Sea from just east of Nîmes to the Spanish border is a multifaceted region with an impressive number of sunshine hours, drying winds, and variations in elevation that make it possible to grow the 58 permitted grape varieties with ease. The IGP, Indication Géographique Protégée, or in English, Protected Geographic Indication, of Pays d'Uc, is an area that, John, many serious collectors routinely overlook given its reputation for easy-to-drink wines of a nebulous geographic region. Yet, steadily, the designation has been transforming, coming into its own, helped by a modern approach, foreign interest in investment, and varietal labeling. So more than just pleasure for price, the area is also a non-conformist playground thanks to the freedom afforded specifically by the Pays d'Uc IGP designation, where you can find creative wines of quality, unique blends, and inventive marketing. Here, pretense has totally been removed from the equation.
France's largest IGP has become known worldwide for its easy, widely appealing, good value wines, despite what we just said. But the history, of course, dates back much further. Those seafaring Phoenicians from the eastern Mediterranean planted the first vineyards in what we now know as the Languedoc-Roussillon in the 6th century BCE. Yet, it wasn't until those Romans arrived in 118 BCE in Narbonne that France's oldest wine region began to flourish. Its development really began as a result of gifts of land bestowed by Emperor Augustus on Roman war veterans, many of whom had been brought up in the vineyards of Campania. As estates flourished, the Via Domitia, Gaul's first Roman road connecting Italy to Spain and which spans over 200 kilometers across the Languedoc-Roussillon, allowed for the accumulation of wealth from trade and further expansion. Then came the monks. Few European wine stories, Sarah, seem not to involve monks, wouldn't you say?
I think this is maybe the 10th time we've talked about monks this month. So yes, I would agree with you.
Romans and monks. Well, when that Roman Empire crumbled and the waves of invasion subsided, the Cistercians and Benedictine monks arrived to reestablish the vineyards of the Languedoc-Roussillon. They busied themselves mapping out the region and distinguishing noteworthy vineyards, as they have in so many places, and they made headway in taming this rugged landscape in some parts by terracing those steep coastal slopes, such as those of the Côte de Vermeil. But we'll be focusing on the IGP area. So back to our post-Roman period, that Renaissance led to the expansion of maritime markets, attracting royalty such as King Charles IX and his mother, Catherine de Medici. Later in the 18th century, who else but Thomas Jefferson was on the ground and reported to have become enamored with the wines of the area and subsequently, as President of the United States, exempted taxes from those wines in order to facilitate imports. Clever man that he was.
Definitely. You know, in short, foreign interest has really been present throughout the winemaking history of the Languedoc. And you know, this area burgeoned post-phylloxera and grew to an impressive 430,000 hectares under vine, which is more than half of what France grows today. But those high crop levels producing mediocre wines needed to radically transform in order to compete in the increasingly competitive global market. So varietal-based wines were determined to best meet export demand, especially in the New World. And quality also underwent a significant transformation at the end of the 1980s and continued to do so after 2009 when the region was recategorized by the EU labeling conventions as a PGI/IGP.
430,000 hectares. That's like 10 times New Zealand's current production. The entire country of New Zealand fits 10 times in this area, just to give you a sense of the scale. Of course, it's not that large anymore, but it is a big area. And shifting gears now, get this, 13,000 growers, that's another very large number, 13,000 growers of the paddock share diverse geologies from granites to sandstones, limestones, schists and shales, volcanic rocks, gravels and sands and clays. It's all there. Vineyard elevations also range from those upper sites in the foothills of the Pyrenees down to the low-lying marshy coastal plain of the Camargue. But of course, vineyards are not in the marshes themselves, but there are many coastal vineyards a stone's throw from the water. Winds are also here, important enough to have been named. There's the Tramontane, a dry continental wind that picks up speed as it passes through the corridor between the Pyrenees and the Massif Central from the northwest. As is the more famous Mistral that gains strength as it barrels down from Switzerland and the Alps along the Rhone River before spreading out across the Mediterranean coast. And then, of course, there are plenty of coastal sea breezes helping to ensure that the vines are kept cool, clean, and more or less disease-free, and contributing, if you are a believer, to some salinity in those seaside coastal vineyard wines.
And something else I recently learned, John, the IGP of Paydoc has an additional quality inspection that's done on 100% of the wines that carry the IGP certification. This is a tasting of the wines to determine their quality. It's actually not required by the European Union for IGPs. It's something that the Paydoc takes upon themselves to do. Now, with roughly 120,000 hectares of vineyard grown in the IGP Paydoc designation, that makes up 61% of all IGP wines in France. So more than half. It's big, it's significant, it's important. But let's hear from our guests today who have joined us in the midst of harvest.
We'll be speaking to the owners of three winemaking operations in the Paydoc: Domaine Guéda, Les Jamelles, and Domaine Layeuse, each with their own perspectives on the strengths and challenges of the region. First up is Tim Ford, owner and managing director at Domaine Guéda, a family-owned winery whose organic vineyards are in the heart of the Languedoc in the foothills of the Pyrenees, about 25 kilometers southwest of the beautiful walled city of Carcassonne. Tim and co-owner Anthony Record joined forces with winemaker Vincent Chanceau in 2004 to focus on sustainably produced wines with modern appeal. In fact, in his words, very French wines with new world marketing is how Tim describes them. You'll note by the accent that Tim is English and actually grew up in a small vineyard in the southeast of England before going on to run a horticultural business in Africa. But married as he is to a French woman, they eventually made their way back to the south of France to establish Domaine Guéda. We reached Tim at the Domaine just outside of Carcassonne.
I'm Tim Ford, the owner of Domaine Guéda in the Languedoc, south of France. We started the winery in 2003. And I have a team of French winemaker called Vincent Chanceau. And between us, we've done this, running it for 18 years now.
And how did you end up in the Languedoc, in the Paydoc?
Well, a short answer to that. By profession, I'm a flower farmer. I spent 25 years in Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Ethiopia, Kenya. I ended up in Zimbabwe with some political problems in 2002. Then I met Vincent Chanceau, my winemaker, at Borkenhuisgloof in South Africa in Cape Town. And we met there 2002, 2003. And I have a French wife. I'd spent 25 years in English-speaking countries, and I needed a project. Vincent was a young winemaker wanting to go back to France. And basically, we put a pin in the map, and we ended up in the Languedoc. My father had a small winery in Kent in England, and I wanted to do that as a retirement project. But at 44 years old, I was far too young. And, you know, now we've created a winery of over 100 hectares and over a million bottles. It's not really a retirement project, to put it mildly.
So speaking of the property that you own, Domaine Guéda actually has four specific sites. And I was hoping you could take us through them, because I think that they're nicely representative of some of the diversity that can be found in the Paydoc.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why we chose the Languedoc, because, again, working with introduced the wine business in South Africa, they're quite used to bringing grapes in from distances to a central winery point, you know, like satellite wineries. So we were quite comfortable with the concept of having a winery based in Côte La Malpère, which is near Limoux, near Carcassonne, where we vinify everything, but we grow our grapes on four different sites. One is La Livinière, which is on very limestone, calcare soil, fantastic grapes at around 400 meters altitude. We get a lot of our top Grenache and Syrah from there. Then we got another site in the Roussillon, two sites in the Roussillon. One is on schist, you know, very black fragmented slate. That's south facing towards the sea. We get Grenache, Syrah, Carignan, a little bit of Mourvèdre from the Roussillon. Then we got another one slightly higher called La Tour de France, which is on granite. That's our third terroir, satellite terroir. And the fourth terroir is here at Gaida, at the home farm, where we're on sandstone. So we've really got four, we call it Les Quatre Terroirs de Gaida, which is our four very distinctive terroirs. And all the grapes come here for vinification. And the furthest vineyard is maybe 100 kilometers away.
Tell us about your decision to use appellation labeling versus the IGP labeling. What comes into play when you're deciding what to put on the bottles?
Well, we firmly are pro-IGP. I mean, don't forget, a lot of these vineyards are on appellation soil. We could, but we vinify it all here. And the beauty about the IGP, as you probably know, you've got 58 different grape varieties. I call it one big appellation. We bring the grapes here to vinify, and of course, it gives one identity to what we do, which is making delicious wines at a reasonable price. You know, that's what we're trying to do. Everyone's trying to do, I suppose. And it's wines we want to make. So not having the appellation label, having the IGP, it gives us just a massive area, choice of cépage or varietals we can use and mix. That was our decision, to make wines that we wanted to make, not dictated. I mean, if we use the appellation where the vineyards built, where we are here at Gaida, we would have to plant 50% Merlot. But we didn't want to grow Merlot. We didn't want to use Merlot. We leave that to Bordeaux. But I know it's the most popular grape variety, but we didn't want to do Merlot. So we stick with the IGP system so we can mix and blend the grapes we want to do, the varieties, and make the blends we want to make.
Now, I had a question here about your about agritourism in Pays d'Uc, and I thought you'd be a great person to ask about this, because Domaine Gaida was originally a staging post for travelers, and now you've converted it into these accommodations and restaurants. Is that becoming commonplace in the Pays d'Uc? Is there a growing movement to encourage tourism, agritourism?
Well, Uno Tourism, we call it here, Uno Tourism. Not enough. I mean, you know, coming from and doing my first experience of the wine business 20 years ago in South Africa, you know, they've got that so well around Cape Town. I mean, it's every vineyard's a destination. I mean, we've turned Gaida into a destination. You have to have a destination. You have to have something to do. You need a restaurant. You need to be able to keep people. You know, we do tastings, we do blending sessions, we have the accommodation. I mean, it works well for us. We would love more people to do it. Then the Languedoc would become more known for that. People have tried it. It's embryonic, I would say. The whole of France, it's not in their genetics here, the idea of creating a destination. But I think, with no offense to the French, but it's being led by a lot of foreigners with different ideas than the old traditional ideas. So I hope it carries on developing, because for us it works very well, because it's a great way of brand building. I mean, we calculated we had 20,000 visitors last year. That's 20,000 ambassadors of Domaine Gaida. When they leave your cellar door and travel the world, they're providing you offer good experience. They're your ambassadors for life.
Right. And, you know, this is why I was it seems reasonable to me because there is such a great amount of foreign investments in the Pays-d'Arc that, you know, that also brings kind of that innovation and new ideas and especially new ideas about tourism. So I'm really happy to see that you're in that game for sure. And it sounds like you're still an innovator in that respect at this moment.
We're trying to. I mean, our way of making wine is very traditional French. Our probably way of communicating and marketing is more New World. But the actual wine is absolutely made in the old world style. But our packaging and communication and marketing is probably a little bit more New World.
And what's the split of your sales, domestic and export?
We do the nice mix. We've tried and keep it about. We do 50% sold in France. We have about 2,800 active customers in France, which is a job unto itself. And then we sell in about 40 other countries. So we well spread, and we like that as firm foundations. Everyone, I think it's very important to build your domestic market. That gives you credibility and stability. And then we've developed a very good export market, say, in 40 countries now.
Do you find you have to position the wines a little differently to sell them domestically versus exports?
We've been very fortunate in that way. Of course, domestic market, you can't sell capsules. You know what the capsule bagalice is supposed to cork?
Screw cap, yes.
Screw cap, that's the word. Capsule, screw cap. Of course, in France, they won't touch screw caps. So, of course, the pain with that is you've got to make two different lots. You've got to make screw cap for export for Northern Europe and cork for France. So, positioning, we don't change the wine at all. I mean, 20 years ago when we started, people said, well, to sell in America, you're going to have to put more residual sugar. You've got to make it more like the diet the Americans are used to, which have a lot more sugar in their diet. But we never did that, and we battled a bit. But now I think that's not an accepted practice anymore. So we make one wine, and that goes to all our markets. But yeah, I mean, prices are different and price points are different. The mix, that's what we see. We do 20 different wines, and you'll see every country picks up a different, a range of wines within that 20 offerings. That's very evident in different markets.
You make an effort to produce sustainably. And are you using the Achevé-Eau program in order to, are you labeling Achevé-Eau?
We're using Bureau Veritas for all our beer wines. So we've got the green leaf of the organic status, mm-hmm. Which, of course, you can't use in the States. We are vegan and vegetarian because we use bentonite for fining. We don't use any egg product or fish product.
I've noticed you're very much supporting of biodiversity, and I guess your background growing flowers in Africa kind of plays into that. But was that the original plan when you arrived in the Languedoc to include biodiversity, or did you grow into that?
Absolutely. Biodiversity, it's all about diversity, and it just makes so much sense. You know, it's that, in simple terms, it's the plague issue. You got, if you have 1,000 hectares of wheat, you've got 1,000 hectares of the same food source for one pest. You know, if you can break that up with hedges, with planting in between the rows, if you can break up that food source so you vary it, you create a balanced ecology for predators and prey, and you have a balance without using chemicals. We've been fully organic. Our biodiversity is actually brought our chemical bill back down enormously. I mean, people say, oh, it must be more expensive to be organic. It's absolutely not at all. With good biodiversity, creating a good ecological balance in your vineyards, you don't have, you actually have, it's cheaper to produce grapes naturally than it is.
And what have you planted in amongst your vineyards?
We plant various row crops between, I mean, hedges, of course. Every year we're committed now to planting 1 kilometer of hedges every year. Between the vines, we grow phacelia, we grow alfalfa, we grow, you know, something like barley or wheat every year, lucerne. We'll grow things that just grow very rapidly, sometimes nitrogen fixing. And then we use that as a mulch. We normally roll it down and then incorporate it, because then that biodiversity becomes a mulch and a soil improver in the autumn when we plow it in. So It's great. I mean, you can see it just if you pick the grapes. If you see under the destemmer, you can see the pile of ladybirds and all the insects falling off there. It's great. We actually put them back in the field.
Among the many grapes that you grow, varieties that you grow, you also have some Chenin Blanc. Was the decision to plant Chenin Blanc at all influenced by experience you had in South Africa?
Exactly. And our winemaker, Vincent Chanceau, trained and comes from the Loire Valley. So between the Loire Valley and South Africa, we had to plant Chenin Blanc Cabernet Franc. And both those grape varieties, strong in South Africa and in the Loire Valley, have been great success for us. People thought we were crazy when we planted them. They've been really, really successful for us.
It seems like you can grow almost anything, maybe not a Gruner, but who knows. Are there varieties that you wouldn't touch?
I think identity, I mean, we personally don't, as I was saying earlier, Merlot, we can actually grow Merlot here, and it's one of the most popular grape varieties in the world, but we don't grow that. We don't believe that's identity. We still need provenance. You need to grow. The Cabernet Franc and the Chenin Blanc are our quirky ones, I must admit. They're the ones that shouldn't be here, really shouldn't be here. I agree with that. But we do that for fun. It's limited to the few hectares we've got here at the home farm. The home farm, we've got good Atlantic influence, so it's a little bit cooler than, you know, the other parts of the Languedoc. We're the cool side because we've got those Atlantic influences around the Limoux area. But we want grapes with provenance. I mean, we're very strong, Marsanne, Roussanne, Grenache Gris, Grenache Blanc, Carignan, you know, those classic Languedoc Southern France varieties that grapes really that do so well down here. And we identify with those grapes.
Right.
And what do you think about the IGP Pays d'Oc as a brand, as a name that you put on the label? Is there some value to that, or is the value in the fact that under this appellation you can do just about anything that you want to do?
Well,
do people buy Domaine Gaeta, or do they buy an IGP Pays d'Oc that happens to be made by Domaine
Gaeta? No, to be honest, they buy a. I think the IGP still gives a rubber stamp. I think it's an opportunity where you can use those 58 grape varieties. It's a challenge because you have to create your identity within the IGP. I don't think the IGP gives you a free run. You still have to create your identity within it. That's the challenge. There's an opportunity. You've got 58 grape varieties and incredible diversity of terroirs. That's the opportunity. The challenge is identifying yourself within such a diverse terroir and a diverse group of cépage, a grape variety. So,
and a very large area as well, with a lot of different producers. I imagine it's a challenge to, as you say, distinguish yourselves amongst
all these other producers. We're here for challenges. That's what we're here for. And Gaeta and our storytelling and our quality of our wine hopefully defines us. That's our goal.
Right. And, you know, I appreciate that you brought this up because it's something I think very important when you have such a large and obviously competitive market within the IGP of creating your identity. That becomes so important. Whereas other, you know, other AOCs, for example, in France, you know, you are defined by that particular AOC and the IGP, you really get to build something from the ground up. And I've very much appreciated your wines, and this has been a really very helpful conversation, I think.
Just let me, I know you're pressed for time, but what, just your comment on that. I mean, that challenge of creating your identity within such a diverse choice of terroirs and varieties is what keeps us on our feet. I mean, I wouldn't like to be defined by a very limited appellation. That's my personal choice to have that challenge and rise to that challenge. It's exciting.
Well said, and well understood. Well, listen, Tim, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming and spending some time with us on the show. We know you're in the middle of harvest. Good luck. Good luck with the rest of that.
Yes.
Okay, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So long. That was Tim Ford, who joined us from Domaine Gaeta. He says Gaeta, but wouldn't you say Domaine Gaeta in French, Sarah?
Yes, that's how I would pronounce it, Gaïda. But you know what? With that southern accent du midi, that's what probably most people would say, Gaïda.
Well, listeners, up to you. Domaine Gaïda, Domaine Gaïda, outside of the city of Carcassonne.
Our next guests are a dynamic couple, Laurent and Catherine, who founded Les Jamelles and co-founded Abbots and Dolanay in Marseillette, which is a village near Carcassonne, making a range of wines in the region with a particular focus on varietal label wines, which, as we've seen, is quite a theme in today's discussion. Originally from Burgundy, the couple fell in love with the Languedoc, where they produce, of course, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and many other varieties, but still have a foothold in Burgundy. They're producers, négociants, and some of the busiest people we've met in the world of wine.
I'm Catherine Delaunay, the winemaker of Les Jamelles, vin de Pays d'Oc in the south of France.
And I am her husband.
And my translator.
Yes, and I'm a winemaker too. Actually, we met, the two of us, when we were studying enology and winemaking at the university a few weeks ago. and we got married. And so we are a winemaker's couple.
You must be in the middle of harvest right now. You haven't finished, have you, in all of your properties?
We have not finished the harvest yet.
What do you have left to bring in?
In Burgundy, Pinot Noir. Right. And in the south of France, Cabernet Sauvignon, Carignan, Mourvèdre. A little of Pinot Noir too in Limoux area.
Voilà. So that's quite a bit. I'm curious, how do you divide your time between harvest in Bourgogne and in the south of France? Are you traveling back and forth?
Yes, a lot. A lot. Actually, I'm more involved in the winemaking in Burgundy, and Catherine is more involved in the winemaking in the south of France. So we don't see each other a lot during the winemaking season.
Oh.
And in addition, there are a lot of differences. In Burgundy, it's very short, very fast. Everything is done in 1 or 1.5 weeks. Whereas in the Languedoc, it's 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, dear. So how did the two of you come to wine? Are there winemakers in the family ancestry?
Yes, absolutely. For both of us, it's a family culture. It's as far as I'm concerned, my family, my father, grandfather, great-grandfather were already in the wine trade, both négociants and producers in Burgundy. And Catherine's family is originating from the Beaujolais. Her parents were wine growers in the Beaujolais for probably much more generations even.
Could you tell us about the properties that you own in the south of France?
We own about 100 hectares of vineyards, three places. We own about 70 hectares in the plain between Béziers and Narbonne. We own about 25 hectares in Limoux, so in the foothills of the Pyrenees mountains, and about 12 hectares in the Corbière region. But that's what we own by ourselves. We also have some contracts for grape purchase with some other growers. This represents about 400 hectares, and that's wines that we vinify, that we make in our own winery. Then we have some other contracts with other growers who make the wines for us under our winemaker's supervision. And so our own estate is only a small part of our supplies.
What is the production of Les Jamelles right now?
It's worldwide. The total of the collection of the brand, it's about 500,000 cases. It's 500,000 cases, 9 liters.
Oh dear. Okay. So the obvious question is, coming from Bourgogne and Beaujolais, why the Languedoc?
Well, it's a long story. Actually, when we were young winemakers, the two of us, our plan was to work with our parents here in Burgundy. And for some reasons, our family winery in Burgundy was sold to some other people by my father in the early mid-90s. And because of that, Catherine and myself, we decided to leave Burgundy and to go somewhere else. It was the south of France. It was in the mid-90s, 1995. And why the Languedoc? Why the south of France? Because for two main reasons. First of all, because at that time, it was just the time where Languedoc was going through a lot of transformation from a region which used to produce volume, low-end table wine, to a region where a lot of people, a lot of growers were planting interesting international and French grape varieties. And so it was very exciting to be part of this transformation. And the second reason, it's because coming from a region, Burgundy and Beaujolais, where there are basically two, let's say three grape varieties, for young winemakers, it was very exciting to have the opportunity to work with a lot, with tens of different grape varieties. And nowadays, I think we work with something like 22 or 23 different grape varieties. So a lot of excitement.
Right. Go ahead, sorry.
Right. And it's also, it's a region, we are not, as you understood, we are not native from the Languedoc, but that's really a region with which we fell in love.
Still falling in love.
Yes. And it's simply a God-blessed region. It's a God-blessed region, which such a potential for viticulture. There are not a lot of regions like that in the world.
So for you, it's a God-blessed part of the world, as you say, with a fantastic climate. You have the freedom to plant virtually any variety that you could dream of planting there. Where do you see the Languedoc or the Pays d'Oc headed in the future? Do you anticipate changing varieties as climate is inexorably changing?
We have actually, for the time being, nowadays there are, I think, 52 different grape varieties which are allowed, which are authorized to be planted. So indeed, there is a lot of potential. And the Languedoc is not a homogeneous region. There is a lot of diversity. It's a very varied region with a lot of different terroirs, beautiful climate almost everywhere. But because of the situation of the vineyards, because of the altitude and so on, you can accommodate a lot of different grape varieties. And actually, you can always find somewhere where you can have absolutely the best possible conditions for any grape variety. And of course, the climate change is a challenge, but just going slightly higher in altitude may be an answer already. When you think about the geography of the region, the vineyards start on the beaches of the Mediterranean, and it goes up the hill of the mountains of the Cevennes, of the Pyrenees, and so on. You have a lot of different situations, orientations, directions for the vineyards. You have a lot of different soils as well, with different kinds of minerals in the soil. You have some clay, you have some limestone, you have some granite, everything you can dream of. And you have a lot of microclimates as well, especially due to the altitude and to the wind and to the rain and so on. So it gives a huge diversity. And that's what is the most fascinating about this region.
So that huge diversity, as you say, certainly can be an advantage, but it also has to be a disadvantage in some cases. Do you find that it's a struggle sometimes to create an identity from wines from this part of France?
I think there is a kind of geographical identity. The fact that it's in the south of France, Pays d'Oc, it's an entity on itself with the four departments, the four districts, actually. It's very large. It's the largest wine producing region in the world, as far as I know. So there is always a lot of work to be done. But I think over the last 30 years or something like that, since the appellation, but the denomination was created, I think now a lot of consumers all over the world have an idea of where the Pays d'Oc is located, where it is. And they know that it's the south of France. And it's very important because all the consumers in the world, I think, to my opinion, they can associate that with an idea, a kind of image, a kind of dream that they have about the lifestyle in the south of France. It's not exactly Provence, but it's close to Provence. And everybody dreams, especially in cold countries. I'm not talking about Canada at all, but
we do.
It's even for us, you know, there is a kind of romance about that lifestyle in the south of France. And that's one of the beauties of Pays d'Oc. It's a large producing region with large quantities of wines being produced that can all be associated with the south of France lifestyle.
And, you know, speaking of identities that you've forged in the south of France, you've actually forged more than one. Could you tell us a little bit about the project Abbots and Delaunay? You are working with Burgundian producer, working with an Australian winemaker. Is this how it works?
It used to be the case. It's no longer the case.
Okay.
Les Jamelles was our initial project in the south of France. That's the reason why we've moved to the Languedoc. And that's what we created, the two of us, in the mid-90s. And then when we were in the south of France, we met with a couple of Australian winemakers called Nigel and Nerida Abbott, who also had a similar adventure as us because they were coming from outside of the Languedoc. So were we. They were coming actually from much further than us. But the two families, we were interested in this region. We both fell in love with this region. We were both coming with another winemaking culture from other regions. They were coming from Australia. We were coming from Burgundy. So we became friends. And actually, a few years later, they decided to sell their winery. For some family reasons. Naturally, they proposed it to us and we accepted immediately. So actually, for us, Abbots and Delaunay is another winery. That's a winery that we bought to our Abbots friends. They work with us, especially in Nerida, work with us during about 2 years in order to help us to take over everything. But since 2007, now she's no longer, they are no longer involved.
Okay. So can you tell us how, something about the differences in identity between this project and Les Jamelles?
Abbots and Delaunay, it's a boutique winery, actually, with a little of vineyards. Abbots and Delaunay has got its own winery located in a small village called Marseillette, not far from Carcassonne, right. Whereas Les Jamelles is not far from Carcassonne either, but in another village called Mons. And it's really a boutique winery. The goal of Abbots and Delaunay is really to focus on very small quantities of top-end wines from the Languedoc and mostly appellation wines, AOC wines, whereas Les Jamelles, it's more Pays d'Oc, it's more vin de pays. If I had to compare with another kind of industry, I would compare with the cloth industry. And Les Jamelles is more quality prêt-à-porter, whereas Abbots and Delaunay is really haute couture, if you see what I mean.
Is it a challenge to sell? Because I know with the Abbots, you do produce a line of Pays d'Oc wines. Is it challenging to sell very premium wine under the envelope of Pays d'Oc? Is there any kind of, maybe not an actual restriction, but a feeling like you can't go over a certain price point within the Pays d'Oc? Do you feel constrained at all? Because otherwise, you know, you've got a lot of choices within Pays d'Oc. But how about price?
It's a work in progress. It's challenging, you're right. It's difficult, to be honest. We've been doing that for 30 years, not exactly 30 years, but 25 plus. And if I compare with another region that I know well, Burgundy, it's much easier to sell expensive Burgundy wines because that's what is expected. And everybody knows that the top wines from Burgundy are very, very expensive. For Pays d'Oc, it's really a work in progress. You still have to convince. It takes time. You have to prove year after year the quality of your wines. The potential is there for sure. We know because we already produce some wines like that, and we're not the only ones. A lot of people in the Languedoc produce wines that would, without any problem on the global market, deserve prices are, let's say, $50 more, and sometimes even more than that. But it's pretty difficult to convince the buyers, the goalkeepers, sometimes the consumers to pay these prices, simply because you have to build the reputation. It takes a long time. Burgundy, it took centuries. Pédoc was created only 30 years ago or something like that. So it takes a lot of time. Yes, it's more difficult, I must admit. But what I'm absolutely convinced by the fact that the quality potential is there. And when you do some blind testings, for example, sometimes the top Pédoc wines can compete with any top wines in the world without any problem.
Right. I think we agree there. But take us back. So almost 30 years ago, you arrived in the Languedoc with a carte blanche to do pretty much whatever you want to describe. How you went about finding the terroir and creating Les Gemelles. What were you looking for? What were you hoping to achieve?
It was not totally a carte blanche. We had a little of constraints. And the main one was that we were not having any money at all. So the way we started without any vineyards and without any winery. We started almost like kind of flying winemakers. We took the car that we were having at that time, which was a very small car, and we went everywhere in the Languedoc. We visited every valley, every place, every village, and so on, with a geological map. And our goal was to find some terroirs that were adapted to the grapes that we wanted to produce. At the beginning, our goals and our range was very limited. It was three or four different wines. We started with a Merlot, a Chardonnay, a Syrah, and it was really the beginning. Cabernet Sauvignon came later, Cinsault Rosé later too, and then Pinot Noir. But we started with three or four different wines only. So actually when we were looking for some places to grow Chardonnay, for us, Chardonnay gives very good results on limestone soils. So with the geological map, we identified some places where there were some limestone soils. We also wished to find some places in altitude. And so we found some places in altitude and we visited these places, these valleys, and we started to talk with the growers that we were meeting with on the roadside and asking them if they were knowing some people producing Chardonnay. And we visited the growers and we tried to convince them to let us make our own wines in their own wineries. So it was, we needed to be very persuasive. But actually, it worked very well because the Languedoc people are very welcoming, I think. And because at that time, we were in the middle of that kind of cultural revolution, cultural in both sense, because we were at exactly the time where people were starting or were already planting grape varieties like Chardonnay and so on, so-called international grape varieties. And so they were very welcoming with winemakers who could come from other regions with some experience. And so we were coming from Burgundy exactly for the same reasons. There were also some other winemakers coming from other French region and also from other countries. In the late 90s, it was when you were in the Languedoc, you were meeting with some Australian, with some Californian winemakers. Everybody was attracted by this region where so many things were going on. And it was absolutely fascinating it was also even for us. It was the occasion to meet with these winemakers from other countries and from other region in a very exciting atmosphere.
Is the region today where you thought it would be 25 years ago?
It's a difficult question. Yes and no. I think as far as we are concerned with Les Gemelles, we are probably a little further than what we were thinking because we would never have thought that eventually we would produce 500,000 cases of wine. Never. I think also that the quality has improved and is still improving every year dramatically. That's unbelievable, the improvement that have been done in terms of quality. And
are you speaking in general about the wines of
yes.
Pédoc or Les Gemelles?
Pédoc, the whole Pédoc. Not only ourselves, we've been part of this process with many other producers as well, but we are still in contact with a lot of producers. We, as I explained before, we purchase some grapes, we purchase some wines to other growers with whom we have contracts and relationships and so on. We can really assess every year the quality, and the quality is really improving every year. Having said that, as I was explaining before, commercially, in terms of image. Also, a lot of people are doing a lot of efforts, and so are we. We are part of that. There are still some things to achieve. It's not finished. Actually, by definition, it's a never-ending process. But there is still a lot of work to be done to convince the buyers and the consumers about the quality.
You know, there's so much of paid duck in export, and it's certainly been a big success story, the wine of paid duck in export. How has the past couple of years affected export of paid duck? Has the pandemic been detrimental, or did you see a boom in export?
I think, generally speaking, I don't have the exact figures, but I think that the total sales of paid duck wines have not dropped dramatically with the disease, with the pandemic. I think, actually, it's more the distribution channels which may have changed. Of course, as far as we are concerned, for instance, we sell normally a lot of our wines to French restaurants and brasseries and bistros. Of course, in the last 18 months, we have sold almost nothing. But in the same time, the e-commerce, internet sales, and even chains of stores and so on have developed even more because people were not able to drink wine in restaurants with friends. So the consumers were buying bottles to drink at home with their families and so on. I think the paid up wines and Les Jamel in particular are very resilient, because actually they offer a very good value for money, probably a value for money that is probably, to my opinion, unique in the world. And so when things are a little difficult, that's what we have seen several times in the last 25 years, as far as we are concerned. When the economic situation starts to struggle a little and so on, very easily people, the consumers, come back to wines like paid duck, because if they want to afford maybe a little less, they know that they are going to have a fantastic value for a price that remains very affordable.
What is it that makes that type of wine quality possible in the Pays d'Oc? Is it purely a question of climate, or is it the scale of the industry? What are the factors that come together to make the Pays d'Oc a top value region?
It's not really the scale of the industry, because, of course, it's a large category, you're right. But it's made of a lot of individual stories and adventures and wineries and so on. I think it's a combination, yes, of the climate, a very mild and sunny climate, with this diversity of terroirs and the fact that you can grow that many grape varieties and so on. In also, there is not directly any link with the total size of the region, but also in the Languedoc, you can find some pretty large vineyards with vine growers who can easily cover tens of hectares. If I take an example, in Burgundy, the average size of one estate is something like 6 or 7 hectares, whereas in the Languedoc, it's probably between, I don't know exactly, but between 30 and 50. And so that's one of the reasons why, because of economies of scales, why the growers are able to produce grapes that are affordable. And if you mix the fact of having affordable grapes with the quality that you can get thanks to the climate, the terroirs, the quality of the work of the growers, that can explain the success of that category, I think.
Just to get some context here, since you have experience in Bourgogne and in Languedoc, what's the actual cost of producing a ton of Pinot Noir in the Pays d'Oc versus Burgundy, if you were just to look at the raw farming costs? Forget the cost of the land, you know, just the price of grapes themselves.
Let me make a small calculation, because we don't count like that.
Right. I think a lot of consumers are perplexed by the pricing of wines. You know, very often it's based on brand. And when you're above a certain price point, well, then you're just paying for a certain name, not the actual cost of the production of that wine.
The cost of the grapes, it's, depending on the years and so on, it's between 800 and 1,000 euro a ton in paid duck. Of course, that's for good quality of well-known grape varieties, such as Merlot or Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay. Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are slightly more expensive. As far as we are concerned, on one of our estates, which is located in Limoux, where we produce top quality Pinot Noirs and Chardonnay. Our cost of goods is probably about 6 to 7 times that figure. So there are a lot of variations, right, according to where you are, according to the way you work, and so on.
And in Bourgogne, is it that much more expensive as well?
Small calculation. Yes. Bourgogne, for a regional Bourgogne Pinot Noir or Bourgogne Chardonnay, cost of grapes would be about 4,000 euro a ton.
All right. So you're already four or five times higher.
Yes.
All right. Well, that helps to explain why you can get a terrific bottle of Pays d'Oc for $14 or $15 here in our market, whereas Bourgogne, even Générique, starts at, you know, sort of $30 and up.
Yeah, 25 to 30, yes.
Mm. Of the red grape varieties that you produce, which one has the greatest success in export?
Pinot Noir and Cabernet Sauvignon, I think.
We
Syrah, maybe. Syrah, Cabernet.
Our own specialties, there are really four grapes in which we are, or five grapes in which we are really specialists of. Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, that's because of our Burgundy background. Viognier, Sauvignon Blanc. And the last one is lesser known probably by the the connoisseurs. It's Mourvèdre.
Right.
Mourvèdre, it's a grape that we love. It's a native grape from the south of France. Not exactly from the Languedoc. It's originating more from Provence, but it was really planted in the Languedoc in the last 40, 50 years. And it gives very good results in the Languedoc. And we are the largest producer of Mourvèdre grape, and we simply love that grape variety.
I hear Mourvèdre does very well in the UK market.
It's true. It does very well in France too. We've tried in Canada, but it's not known enough by the consumers yet. We still have a lot of work to do to educate a little the consumers about the Mourvèdre grape. It's a very elegant grape with a lot of finesse, very similar to Syrah. I'm sure it's just under the horizon, and eventually it will appear on the market.
And it's interesting because Mourvèdre is a variety that you don't find as a single variety really elsewhere. And in the Pays d'Oc, you have the opportunity to really showcase it on its own.
Absolutely. And we are the largest producer of Mourvèdre. We do 100% Mourvèdre Légemel wine, which is very, very successful. And so we take our part in trying to to convince about.
Well, we hope we can help you spread that word.
We would love to.
Thank you so much for your time.
Really appreciate your time in the middle of harvest and speaking with us here and sharing your love for the Languedoc and the Pays d'Oc region.
It was a pleasure to spend a little of time with you. You'll be always welcome, either in the Languedoc or in Burgundy.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. This was a real pleasure.
Merci, merci bien.
Merci.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That was the enthusiastic couple, Catherine and Laurent Delaunay, founders of the highly successful Légemel brand of wines from the Pays d'Oc.
And our final guest on the show today is Magali Dardet of Domaine Layeuse and her agent Olivier. Magali is the third generation to run Domaine Layeuse, a winery in Metz on the Étang de Thau, that brackish inland body of water where you'll find delicious mussels, among other seafood delights. Domaine Layeuse was built in the 13th century by the Knights Templar atop an ancient Roman villa. And the estate has been in the Dardet family for over 30 years now, with the family sharing in the day-to-day responsibilities. Single-variety wines are a focus sourced from the estate's 80 hectares of vines, all of which have a nice view of the sea. Now, we apologize due to some audio challenges. We had to cut this interview a little bit short, but we managed to pull out some of the more important little tidbits.
I'm working with my family at the Domaine
Layeuse. Yes, my name is Olivier Schaeffer, and I'm in charge of the export market for Domaine Layeuse.
Could you introduce the estate I appreciate that it was built in the 13th century by the Templars, and this is a site of an ancient Roman villa. Can you just paint us a picture of the vineyards that surround you?
Well, the mainly use is a family vineyard. They are making wines for more than 30 years now. And you're right, the estate is located in Metz along the Roussillon, between the Méditerranée and Garrigue and the Bassin de Tour. As you write, the foundations are based on an ancient Roman villa. It was then the Knights of the Templar Order who settled here in the 13th century. And over the century, the buildings have hosted a hospital and later the First Council of Metz. This was during the French Revolution. And now we are here with the family Daudet.
So we're talking about the IGP of the Pays d'Uc. What made you decide to produce wine under the IGP and not one of the AOCs of the Languedoc?
Pays d'Uc allows us to make great variety wines.
For its varietal wine. So when your father purchased the property, what was the criteria? What was being looked for? Perhaps not existing vineyards, but was it the location? What was it? What was special about Layeuse?
Mainly the location, because of the cold climate of the sea. It's about 15 kilometers from the sea, so it's really not far away from the sea. Again, the climate and the sea breeze is very important to have a good freshness at the end.
We like to separate each plot, and with this very large palette, we can do very specific ones.
So it's really a kind of a plot selection of each grape variety.
So living in a country that's obviously obsessed with terroir and very regionally specific wines, for you there in the Pays d'Uc, do you find it an advantage to have the freedom to plant whatever varieties you want? Or have you found it a challenge to get into the French market specifically, not talking about exports because that's a different game altogether, but coming into the French market with varietally labeled wines, which is very rare indeed. How has that worked out?
This liberty is very important for us.
And Pays d'Uc allows us to use some Marcellin and some Lamantino and much more grape varieties, which we could not use if we were an AOP.
You don't call it Roll, you call it Vermentino.
Vermentino, Roll, exactly.
So everyone seems to be calling it Vermentino these days. Is anyone still using Roll?
Yes, but I think most of the producers are changing from Roll to Vermentino. I don't know why, really. Maybe because Vermentino is much well-known than Roll.
Okay.
But even though we know that the actual accepted term in the Pays d'Uc is Roll and not Vermentino.
So, Olivier, tell us about your travels around the world when you're presenting the wines of Domaine de Lieuze. What's the reception that you typically get when you're pouring these wines? What are the more popular varieties, the more successful ones?
People are really enjoying the white wines because they have a really good freshness. And for example, if you take a Sauvignon Blanc from the Domaine de Lieuze, the freshness is really appreciated by in the export market. And because it's a Pays d'Uc, again, price is also very important. So it's a good price point.
Does the Pays d'Uc IGP limit you in some respects as to how much you might be able to charge? Let's say you did a Sélection Parcellaire, a really special single vineyard wine. Do you think there's a glass ceiling of price that you can't really go beyond? I mean, is Pays d'Uc always going to be considered a great value appellation?
Yes, it is. It's a great value appellation. That's right. You want to be competitive. You cannot set a price higher than an IOP. So you have to keep the price as
the wine I first tasted from Domaine de Lieuze was the Syrah Les Épices. I tasted it some years back and thought it was exceptional value. I mean, we're getting back to value here. Yes, I know you're in the Mediterranean and it's a pretty ideal place to be, to live, but also to grow grapes. But what is it that makes such high quality yet relatively inexpensive wines possible?
I think the first point is that we are many, many wine growers, and Languedoc-Roussillon is one of the biggest wine area in the world. And it's a big competition between all producers, and that's the main reason why it keeps the prices not very high.
Pays d'Uc is one of the few places where you have the flexibility to really do almost anything you want, unlike other parts of France. So what's the future for Pays d'Oc? I mean, we're all dealing with climate change. We know that the world has changed dramatically and will continue to do so. So where do you see Layeuse in 20 years? Are there new varieties that you're looking at, or new styles, new blends?
Not too much new grape variety, because after in the cellar, it's very difficult to separate a little cuvée. But having a historic variety is also good for us. For example, the Tarignan is coming back because it is really well adapted. And Syrah still could be very well adapted. And we have some ideas. We want to revisit some vineyard at the place, and we want to choose a grape variety.
Well, thank you very much for your time here on the eve of harvest, or right in the middle of harvest, almost on the end of harvest. We really appreciate your time and sharing thoughts of Pays d'Oc wines and Domaine Layeuse.
Thank you.
Merci,
John.
Merci, Sarah.
Thank you.
That was Magali Dardet of Domaine Layeuse and her agent and translator, Olivier, who joined us from the winery in Metz. And again, we apologize for that rather echoing, cavernous sound quality, but that's life in a big winery. Before that, you heard from Catherine and Laurent Delaunay of Les Jamelles. And at the top of the show, we heard from Tim Ford of Domaine Gaida, or Gaida. All three highly successful operations exploiting the diversity of the Pays d'Oc IGP. So Sarah, I think that for me is the main takeaway. Freedom, diversity. Sentiments echoed by so many winemakers who seem to appreciate and perhaps even have chosen the Pays d'Oc for their projects because of the regulatory freedom and the rich potential diversity.
Exactly. I mean, Laurent and Catherine were mentioning that in Burgundy, which they love, they get to work with only two varieties, but here they get to work with so many different varieties. They get to experiment and they get to produce the wines that, you know, they're passionate about. They're their own creations. And was it Tim who said wines that we want to make, not what the appellation wants us to make, which is pretty exciting in a country that has such restrictive winemaking practices in appellation form.
Well, it's almost a different business. And if you think about it, it's perfectly true. If you buy land in Burgundy, you're signing up to an identity. You're going to make a style of wine within a fairly narrow band of possibilities that has been made there for centuries. It's enshrined in the AOC regulations. Whereas in the Pays d'Oc, you're free to do whatever you want. If you don't want to grow Merlot, well, then don't grow Merlot. Grow what you like. The challenge is, of course, that you have to create an identity. And although I do believe that Pays d'Oc, you know, in the mind of a consumer, a wine drinker, gets you to a pretty good place. You know you're in the south of France. At least the majority of people would know that Pays d'Oc is in the south of France. So you've already got this image of a pretty wonderful part of the world to be in. But it doesn't give you a free ride either. It's a fairly large area. So you, as a winery, wine producer, have to create some sort of identity. And the most successful ones have done just that. What do you think, Sarah?
I completely agree with you. I mean, these are pretty exciting, delicious wines at reasonable prices. You find blends of great varieties from, you know, that would normally be grown on opposite sides of the country. It's real unification here. So I think that's a really exciting part of it. And, you know, I'd love to hear when Laurent said, we're still falling in love. It's simply a God bless region. Here, me, even as an atheist, appreciates the sentiment of that statement. This is an area where you can grow almost anything. And there are places in which these grapes can thrive, even, you know, cooler climate varieties like Pinot Noir. They've found a place for them in and around Limoux.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I'd be a little bit more comfortable in the Pays d'Oc as a wine grower in this era of climate change, because I'd be pretty well equipped with such a wide range of varieties to plant, replant with more suitable grapes, or even shift my production area a little bit further up into the hills. You've got the Massif Central, you have the Pyrenees, or you have, you know, moderated coastal regions as well, where you can deal with the inevitable rise of temperatures and more extremes.
Definitely. You know, there's that adaptability that's, I think will help them continue to thrive despite some of the warming that we're seeing right now. So there's a little point here that I wanted to mention because I was corrected on this. So the correct term to describe the IGP Pays d'Arc is denomination, not appellation. So the French use the term appellation to mean an AOC, and the PGI or IGP designations, you're supposed to call them denominations.
So not Pays d'Arc appellation, Pays d'Arc denomination.
Correct.
I'm so glad you straightened that out for us, Sarah. I would hate to be caught off guard in the wrong company. Now, I mean, finally, perhaps the most important takeaway. Well, what is the most important takeaway? Is Pays d'Arc a source of delicious wines at a reasonable price, as Tim Ford is trying to do at Domaine Gaeta, or can it be more? Would you attempt to make a $50 IGP Pays d'Arc wine, Sarah? Or would you think you'd run into a little bit more commercial trouble? Why not stick with those over-delivering $15 and in some cases under $15 delicious wines? What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? Catherine and Laurent said it very well. It's much easier to sell expensive wines in a place like Burgundy. That doesn't mean that they can't make great wines. They're certainly undervalued wines, but that I think is changing, and the mindset is slowly changing, and we'll see. I think that the quality is certainly increasing in the area faster than the price.
From my position, I would be quite comfortable being recognized, having developed a reputation for delivering terrific quality wine at a very reasonable price, because frankly, the wine world needs more of that. Layer into the fact that a lot of these wines are produced sustainably, if not organically, at prices that in our market here in Ontario are very frequently under $15. That is something that you can't do in too many other parts of the world. I'll shop elsewhere for my ultra premium expensive wines, and I'll look to the Pays d'Arc as a source of terrific everyday wines. I don't think there's anything negative in that. Am I going to get in trouble for saying that, Sarah?
No, you're definitely not going to get in trouble for saying that. And I think that, you know, all the producers we spoke to today were in agreement of that. They don't see it as a negative. They see it, in fact, as a positive. It's part of that freedom. And as Laurent was saying, you know, they've got these two brands, right? Les Jamelles, that produces largely Pays d'Arc wine, and Abbott's, which produces a higher, let's say, higher end Pays d'Arc wine, but mainly AOC wine. And he describes it as prêt-à-porter, Les Jamelles versus is haute couture. We always need prêt-à-porter, right? We always
pretty much every day, that. Sarah.
Not so much
haute couture.
You're all prêt-à-porter, okay.
Wonderful. I'm glad we got that straightened out.
Right.
So there you have it. Pays d'Arc, source of terrific value wines every day with amazing sunshine, diverse grape varieties, diverse terroirs, and responsibly produced wines. Why not? We need more of that. Go out, get them while you can. And 25 wines sell every second, 25 Pays d'Arc wines. Is that the stat? So obviously people have figured this out.
Yes.
I don't know, Sarah. I think value is timeless.
That's true.
It's atemporal. It exists outside of time. There's always a time for value.
No, you're right.
But we digress. And I think we've reached the end of yet another fascinating episode of Wine Thieves. Thank you, as always, for listening in. Always look forward to your comments. Drop them on our Instagram account at wine_thieves.
Or get in touch with us at Wine Align. See what we're doing. If you'd like to read some of the reviews we've written about the wines of the Pays d'Arc, head on over to winealign.com. That's all one word, winealign, ALIGN.com.
I'm your co-host, John Sabo.
And I'm Sarah D'Amato.
So long.
À la prochaine.
Au revoir.